Welcome into another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick, and I'm joined by the legend, Brian Snow, for tonight's podcast. Snow, not a whole lot changing on the recruiting front since last week when we talked, but there are a few things to sort of note. The first being that Eddie Ekior made his visit over the weekend. Obviously, these types of things, like, you know, you hear the same thing pretty much every time. The visit went well. He enjoyed it. His family enjoyed it. They're nice people, you know, they liked campus. I don't think, because this was his first official visit, it didn't seem like there was ever a plan for him to be committing right after it. He still plans to take visits to Florida, Miami of Florida, and Vanderbilt. And he will start that with Florida next, or this coming weekend, and then Vanderbilt the following weekend. All of those schools, though, also are recruiting other bigs. So I think he's kind of contingent on a lot of other recruitments right now. And that includes with Xavier and Torian Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting with Eddie because he's the mid-year kid and just how it's all going to work out. I think there's a lot of moving pieces. He's gotten started on his process a little later than most. So we don't know at this point. You know, as you said, he had a good visit, but it's still early in the visit process. He's a kid who tracks to be, you know, almost a signing day type decision.
Yeah, but like he really can't push it too much farther past. I mean, he can, but it wouldn't seem that he would want to push it much farther past signing day because he's planning on enrolling in January at whatever college he decides and being, you know, a mid-year guy, like you said. So something would seemingly have to happen by November, I would think, in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will. It's just a matter of squeezing in the visits and, you know, will he go to Florida and fall in love? It's possible. You can never rule that out. They just missed out on Tyler Cook tonight. So, you know, they're going to be in full court press mode. They're going to have playing time to offer. We'll see if, you know, he actually even likes Florida. I don't know. But it'll be interesting. I mean, I don't think Xavier's sweating bullets on Eddie Ekior. I think they'd like to get him, but they know they don't need him.
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely a good way to characterize the current climate of Xavier. And really, that's sort of where they're at with whoever they're recruiting at any spot right now. They're not in a situation where they feel they have to get any of these guys. And that's why you only have a few targets really still on the board for 2016 and why they're not pursuing, you know, casting a wider net, because they just don't have to have anybody necessarily, only really the guys that are sort of their guys that they think can really help them. And obviously the other big, other than Eddie, is Torian Thompson, who we mentioned. And really nothing new on him. You know, he's got that Syracuse visit coming up. I guess there's a possibility that he could commit on the visit, and if not, then we go into sort of watch mode for the next several days right after his visit ends at Syracuse and see what happens with him. But I think Torian's, I don't expect him to commit on the Syracuse visit, but I could see it closing up pretty soon thereafter.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to think it's coming to an end one way or the other. His family isn't one that'll probably commit on the visit, but you never know for sure. And we'll see what happens when it gets to Monday.
All right. Then the other two guys that the staff is still recruiting are both wings. Obviously, Jalen Barford, the junior college guy that they were looking at, committed to Arkansas yesterday, the day before. So he is out of the mix. Now the two guys still on the list. The main guy, Xavier Sneed. We talked about him a lot on the last podcast. His visit starts this Thursday. So we're recording this Wednesday night. His visit starts tomorrow. It's a huge official visit. Obviously, depending on who you ask with this one, Snow, it's up in the air. It's either Kansas State, Illinois, or Xavier. And I've heard kind of all three out of mouths of different people are leading. So this one really still up in the air. The official visit is going to be important.
Yeah. You know, if I had to take a stab at the order at the moment, it would be Xavier, Illinois, Kansas State, but that's far from the most educated of guesses I've ever given. Xavier and his father and mother keep things pretty close to them. You know, the high school coach isn't too much involved in the process. The AAU coach isn't too much involved in the process. I do think a decision could come as soon as Monday. And when you hear that, some people are going to make, you know, the 1-2 connection, visiting Xavier, decision on Monday. I don't think you should correlate that. I think it's Xavier's last visit, and he's going to decide right afterwards, and it could be any of the three.
Right. And obviously, you know, you're always in a good position when you are the last visit. That's usually a very good position to be in if he plans to make a decision right after that. And I know sort of the date, September 28th, has been thrown around there that he's going to make his decision. I don't know if he's actually confirmed that yet, but it sounds like things are going to come to a close after he makes this visit. But like you said, still up in the air. It's a three-team race. We'll pretty much just have to monitor the visit and then go from there. It does seem, if I could say one thing going in Xavier's favor, I would say that it seems like the staff has done a good job of building up a relationship with his family and earning the trust of his parents. I think they feel very comfortable with the idea of him going to Xavier, and that's always something you want when you're recruiting any kid.
No question.
All right, the other guy that's still on the list, and let me preface this by saying it is a long shot. I mean, this guy is, but they've been recruiting him since his freshman or sophomore year, before that, whenever, but they've been involved with him throughout. The reason we haven't talked about him much is because he's been a big-time prospect that has kind of had, you know, other schools in the forefront and big-name schools for a long time. Seemed like Xavier had kind of fallen out of the mix, but nothing's really seemingly happening with his recruitment in terms of him moving in one direction or the other and getting closer to a commitment. So I think that, combined with the fact that he's really good friends with Tyreek Jones up at Vermont Academy, has sort of gotten Xavier, you know, they've hung around, and now recently it seems like maybe they feel there's more of an opportunity to keep this thing going and continue to get more involved. I mean, when you look at some of the other top schools that are recruiting Bruce Brown at Vermont Academy, I think it's, you know, like Indiana just is kind of a interesting situation right now. I don't know if that's the best situation to jump into if you're a prospect, and if you feel comfortable with that if you're a prospect's parents. And then, you know, like one of the other top schools that he was considering, Georgetown, is it a great fit for him considering the Princeton offense, and he's a big athletic, you know, bucket getting elite athlete type wing? It's an interesting recruitment right now that I don't think anyone has a real good feel for. So Xavier's kind of kicking the tire. I shouldn't say kicking the tires because they've been involved all along, but they're kind of trying to make sure that flame is still lit and rekindling, so to speak, here in the last few weeks. I think they maybe have an outside chance in this one is how I'd characterize it right now.
Yeah, I mean, the situation with Bruce is interesting. This is a kid whose mom said you can't make any unofficial visits or any official visits until October. And I believe the first weekend in October is a testing weekend. So whatever it is, the ACT, SAT, I don't know what they take on the East Coast. I don't care. He's going to be taking a test. So really, realistically, the first weekend he can even make a visit is October 10th. And from what I'm told, and I'm close with someone close to the situation, the kid's lukewarm on Indiana. Georgetown's done the best job of recruiting him, but he doesn't know if he fits the Princeton. Providence has dropped off. You know, St. John's is in there a little bit. Arizona was messing around, but I haven't heard them much lately. Texas, you know, they're kind of with other guys, and they have a million guards. So it's kind of a situation that's weirdly open. You know, Xavier was recruiting them really hard, I want to say his sophomore year, and then they kind of dropped off, and now they're kind of picking back up. You know, it's still a wishy-washy kind of gray area situation. Xavier's going to be there. They're going to be there anyway, so they're not wasting any time going after him. But, you know, still a lot to play out before you could consider Xavier a serious factor. One thing that should be noted, while I don't know this for sure, I can't imagine a scenario in which Xavier adds two perimeters in this class to go with Quentin Gooden. So I couldn't – if they get Xavier Snead, I would say that ends it with Bruce Brown.
And to point something out that might make a little more sense for the listeners, this is a guy who Rick Carter was previously recruiting when he was on staff. And then, you know, the staff, it's the same situation with Tyreek Jones. They were already recruiting him before Luke Murray joined the staff, and they had these relationships. The staff continued to watch these guys. Then Luke Murray joins the mix, has those same connections up in the Northeast, and they're back in the mix a little heavier with these guys, and it worked out well. So that's why in some of these cases you've seen the names pop up early on, you know, sophomore year, whatever, when Rick Carter was still here and recruiting them, and then it faded maybe for a little bit, and then all of a sudden Xavier's back in the mix and ends up landing Tyreek Jones and potentially being back in the mix for Bruce Brown. So that may help some of the listeners put those pieces together and make a little more sense as why those recruitments have played out the way they did. All right. So I think that pretty much does it for any recruiting stuff. There's just not a lot going on in 2016, as we've talked about, because there's not a huge need for Xavier in 2016. They've got kind of their top guys. That's who they're focused on. And, they're obviously recruiting tons of young guys. The staff has been out all over the place, both locally and across the nation, looking at younger recruits as well, stopping on those guys. We talked about some of them last week, and we'll continue to update you on the progress with some of those top guys as we continue throughout this season. But Snow, we started it last week, previewing the position groups for this upcoming year's roster. And last week we talked about the big men, you know, the forwards, the post players, the guys who are going to make up that side of things. Tonight we wanted to talk about the wing position group. And specifically, we're talking about Trayvon Blewett, we're talking about Remy Abel, and we're talking about JP McCura. So when we talked last week, we mentioned that we figured both Remy and Trayvon would start in this lineup, at least to begin the year, assuming Miles Davis is the point guard, or potentially even maybe like Edmund Sumner. But I think Remy and Trayvon are very likely to both be in the starting lineup and play a ton of minutes as two of the top players on this team. Where, in your opinion, let's start with Trayvon, because he was the second leading scorer on the team last year, scored 11 points a game. Where can Trayvon get better this year, in your opinion?
Not shoot 32% from three.
And I think that's a given.
Yeah, I mean, he's way too good of a shooter to shoot 32% from three. And I think he has to, one, just make open shots, which he struggled with mightily at times, and two, be smarter about the shots that he needs to get in rhythm. You know, sometimes it would be a one-pass possession where Trayvon gets it, and it wasn't necessarily a terrible shot, but it wasn't a great shot either. He's got to limit those to maybe one or two a game instead of three or four a game. So I would say a little bit shot selection, and then make open ones. I mean, that's what you do. And I would also say occasionally grab an offensive rebound.
Yeah, one of the guys that it's always great to talk to Byron Larkin about any of these players, because he looks at the game a little bit differently than I do all the time. And the main reason for that is because he scored a whole lot more points than I did. The thing that always bothers him about Trayvon that he's mentioned to me multiple times is that he's like, this is a guy who averaged over 35 points a game in high school or whatever it was. You know, he's scoring 40 points consistently in high school. He said to me, I want to see him look like the man more often, look like he wants to take over. And I think a lot of times the nature of the animal in college basketball, you're going to defer. I mean, early in the season, Xavier honestly kind of rode Trayvon a lot at times when they were trying to figure out. It didn't seem like a lot of people were willing to step up and take big shots. And I think Trayvon kind of did do that earlier in the season. But as the season went on and that team last year figured out who they were, I think he kind of deferred a little bit more to letting things run through D and through Matt. And it made sense. It worked for them, obviously, with the run they made. But I think we'll see that a little bit more, what Byron's talking about. Trayvon's always been a super confident kid. I don't think he lacks for confidence. I don't think that's an issue. I think it's the way last year's team developed and things played out. I don't think that's going to be an issue this year. I think he ends up being kind of the go-to player for this team and kind of the alpha male out of this group, because he's always had those types of characteristics on the court, no matter who he's played with, and he always played it on loaded AAU teams.
Yeah, but I will say, I think for the first time in Trayvon's life, basketball was difficult for him last year. And he didn't respond the way that I think he should have and the way I think he's capable of. And that's not to be critical of him. That's just being a freshman. Just me as someone who knows him really well, I didn't expect him to act like a freshman. And he did at times when basketball became difficult, when he wasn't the best player on the floor. Like I don't want to say he pouted, but I think he was content to be a guy on the court instead of still being the man. And I don't think that happens this year. And I think that's when he started missing shots. He started feeling a little sorry for himself. I've never gone through a shooting slump before. And when I have, I would just shoot 28 times in high school and get out of it. You can't do that in college. So I think now he knows how to be a college basketball player. And I know he wasn't expecting what happened last year. I know his father wasn't expecting what happened last year. I know the coaches weren't expecting what happened last year. And I don't think it'll happen again this year with him just going through such a prolonged slump and almost – I don't know if he lost confidence or just was content to fit in. But something happened, and that can't happen again.
Well, even him being content to fit in is him losing confidence. because that's not who he is. That's never been how he played the game. And I think you're absolutely right. And it shows in his shooting numbers, like you mentioned, to start this whole thing off. He's never shot the ball that way. He's not a 32% shooter. And I don't think that'll happen again. But that's sort of the transformation, I think. That's the thing you're watching with Trayvon is, does that switch happen? And part of it, you know, we heard a lot about this, kind of, I think, talking to people around the program after last season, that his conditioning and his weight, you know, we've always talked about him kind of having that fat kid gene. He puts on pounds. And during the season, when you can't condition every day because you've got to keep yourself fresh for games, for some guys it is tougher to keep the weight off, and you wouldn't think it would be because you're playing games constantly, but when you're not able to condition constantly and work out the way you were in the offseason, and you don't understand how to properly eat and your body's just not ready for that, it happens to young guys. Heck, it happened to Kenny Freeze for his whole career. So I think, you know, that's going to be another thing for Trayvon, that we've heard that a few times, that his conditioning and his body is going to be important, and he's certainly taken the steps in the offseason to adjust to that and get down even more from where he was at the beginning of last season. We'll see how he goes this year, if he's able to keep that weight off and stay in top conditioning.
Yeah, I mean, that, and he should be the leading scorer on this team, and Xavier needs him to be the leading scorer on the team.
I would agree with that. Remy Abel, to me, Remy Abel is Remy Abel. I don't think his stat line will change a bit this year, really at all. I mean, he'll shoot a little less from the outside. You know, he shot 41% last year from three. I don't know if we'll see that again necessarily, but he's a good shooter, and he picks his spots pretty well. When he gets hot, he shoots a little more. When he's not feeling it, he'll go a few games without even attempting a three. So I think that's sort of an advantage of having a Remy Abel, is he kind of understands his role. And when he's locked in on the defensive end, no one really in the conference is a better one-on-one defender. So I think Remy, again, not going to see any different from what you saw out of him last year. About eight points a game, you know, a couple rebounds, a couple steals. That's who Remy Abel is.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. He's going to be fourth or fifth on the team in scoring, going to be their best perimeter defender, going to play 25 minutes a game. You know what you're going to get from Remy Abel.
The most interesting player out of this group is obviously J.P. McCura. And it's not only because of his talent, his ability, the flashes he showed last year, but also because where exactly does he fit in this lineup? Finding minutes for him isn't exactly going to be easy. And we kind of knew when they took Trayvon and JP in the same class, we knew this was going to be interesting when you got two kids that essentially play the same position, that are threes, how they were going to get them on the court at the same time, or if not, get them both enough minutes. I'll say this. First of all, J.P. McCura has to earn those minutes. And I don't know that so far, and I haven't seen anything yet. We haven't started practice yet. But just in the little bit I've seen, the open gym stuff, I don't know that I've seen anything that says, okay, yeah, this kid is ready to make a huge jump. But a lot of times going from freshman to sophomore year, guys do make a significant jump. So if he does, where does he fit in, Brian? How do they get him on the court?
$1 million question. I mean, if you figure Trayvon's playing 30 minutes, you figure JP's playing 25 minutes, or excuse me, Remy's playing 25 minutes, you're going to get Edmund on the court. Miles is going to play some at the two. JP's going to have to be on it now. Like, that's just reality. And I think Xavier wants to play JP because he's explosive as a scorer. You just don't get many guys who can put the ball in the basket like he does. But he's going to have to earn it, and some of that comes with, you know, not being horrendous on defense. So he has to not be horrendous on defense, and he's going to have to really make shots. And the one thing JP does provide, he's a very good offensive rebounder. Sometimes with the kamikaze style of, you know, just run, jump, and hope and pray, but it's effective. And, you know, so he does bring that asset along with his shooting scoring. So, you know, JP's going to have to really be on it this year because minutes are tight. And who knows how long Trayvon's going to slide down to the four. I know you think he's going to play more four than I do personally. So it's just going to be interesting.
Well, and you know, that's an interesting point to bring up. I know we talked about the post position last week, but really Kaiser and Makinde London are kind of guys we've always talked about, hybrid, versatile players. And the question becomes, you know, I don't think either one of those guys are really going to take minutes away at the three. And a lot of that's because Xavier has a logjam in the backcourt already especially with Trayvon and JP at the three. But then you've also got Edmund and Miles that are going to be moving around, rotating through those three spots when they're just trying to get guys on the court. So to me, this is going to be like JP is in a good spot for his development, because he's going to have to earn it. Like, he's not going to get minutes out of necessity. They don't have to put him on the court ever, probably, with this roster that they have. They have enough balance, they have enough versatility and guys that can do different things. And he doesn't bring, to this point, he's brought nothing on the defensive end to where he's going to earn minutes there. So if he doesn't prove something, that one, he's gotten significantly better defensively, and two, offensively, he can be consistent and give them what they want, which obviously as a scoring spark off the bench is one thing, but to play regular minutes and find a role on this team regularly, he's going to have to show consistency, and it'll start in practice from day one. So I think early on, you know, aside from the point guard story, which we'll touch on the next podcast, I think JP McCura is going to be one of the more interesting storylines to follow throughout the beginning of practice, because every minute's going to matter for him in trying to earn a role on this year's team.
Yeah, I mean, and this is why when you and I talk, and granted, they're going to lose Remy after the year, I get that. But when we say, like, people, like, there's just not much room, you know, I know every fan loves to use all 13 scholarships. This is why coaches hate it. This is why Xavier's not freaking out if they don't get anybody to finish out this class. There's only, what is it, 200 minutes each game. Like, if you have 10 bodies and 10 good bodies, someone's not playing. And two guys aren't playing as much as they want to, let alone if you have 12 or 13.
You know, this brings up an interesting question. Let me ask you if you agree with this at all, Brian. And I don't want to sound ignorant about the history of Xavier basketball, because obviously, you know, Sean Miller did great things and raised the level of Xavier's recruiting, and Thad Matta did as well. So I'm not trying to act like this staff has all of a sudden just figured out how to recruit unlike any of the other staffs. But I feel like in the past, even some players that ended up being significant contributors and great players in Xavier history, there was always, Xavier was getting like, yeah, you landed that three-star, that borderline top 100 kid. You landed that one big name per class, or two big names per class maybe, but then there was always that guy or two that they were bringing in that quite honestly just didn't expect to be recruited, I don't think, by schools at Xavier's level. I mean, they were beating out some small Ohio or Midwestern-type schools for different guys and building their team that way more so, whereas now, I mean, that 2014 class, you landed a bunch of guys who expected to go in and contribute early on. There weren't guys who were impressed that they were getting recruited by Xavier. Xavier had to win them away from other programs that were of the same level. Do you agree with that at all, or is that far-fetched at all? I guess what I'm saying is, is it a little bit different now that Xavier's raised their recruiting profile a little bit to where they don't have those kids that are happy to be recruited by Xavier anymore? They've got, you know, they've got guys that are coming expecting to play wherever they go.
I mean, I guess Sean did it occasionally with like Andrew Taylor, but that was an extremely unique situation. Another chapter for the book. Then, you know, maybe you could even throw Brad Redford into that mix.
Well, like, you Dante know. Jackson, who was Dante Jackson recruited by?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, at the end it was Xavier and Dayton, but I mean, he seriously considered Michigan. Mm-hmm. Obviously wanted to go to Ohio State. Ohio State didn't offer. But everybody knew Dante was staying close to home, so a lot of teams didn't waste their time. I think Indiana did offer, but then things went haywire, and he wasn't even going to consider them. I think that was in the Samson debacle time. So, but Dante was heavily thought of and highly recruited. It's just he wasn't going far from home,
right,
and he didn't talk to anybody, so no one could get him on the damn phone. And anyone who knows Dante listening to the podcast can tell him I said that. In fact, I'll probably text him and tell him.
I was going to say, he'll probably be listening to this back and firing tweets back at you tomorrow, knowing Dante and yours back and forth relationship. So anything to it or nothing to it at all, or an interesting thought? Not at all?
I mean, I don't know what to make of it. I just know, like, this is why Villanova has 10 guys on the roster, because minutes are just hard, and they'd rather not have to deal with all the BS of a player being upset and having to deal with mommy calling and daddy calling and Uncle Bob calling. And I think fans lose sight of that sometimes. Say, well, what are we going to do with these two open scholarships? Nothing. Right. That's good.
Give them to an earnest walk-on who earned his way for a free year, you know, like they've done with Tim Steinbrück or other guys in the past.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Snow, I think unless you have any other thoughts on the wing position group as a whole, I think we've kind of exhausted all possibilities on this podcast.
So I guess this means we're putting Edmund Sumner in the point guard category.
Well, I'm going to use him in the backcourt, just if nothing else, for sake of having three guys back there. But
makes sense to me.
Yeah, we'll talk about him next podcast, and that will probably be the most interesting podcast leading up just a week before the beginning of Xavier basketball practice and the start of this 2015-2016 season. For Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.